Good evening, Madam Chairwoman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chris Molendorp, representing the people of the 123rd District, parts of Cass County and South Kansas City. Tonight I present to you House Bill 1136 for your consideration. Preface my testimony with a couple of things. For some of you, this is the second year you've seen this. For some of you, this is the third, maybe even fourth year you've seen this. I have great respect for the difficult job correctional officers have. I have great respect for the long hours and the pay that isn't as good as it should be. I also have great respect for the difficulties of running a correctional facility. With that said, I wanted to take just a moment and mention that this is maybe the shortest bill you'll consider this year. It is one sentence. Beginning July 1st, 2013, no person shall smoke or otherwise use tobacco products in any area of a state correctional center or the grounds thereof. So what I mean by that is the campus. And 26 states now have gone to smoke-free correctional facility environments. In fact, little old Cass County, Missouri, our jail is smoke-free. Last night, 236 inmates were under the care, custody, and control of Representative Bratton and I's tax dollars, and Sheriff Deal does not allow them to use tobacco either. Let me share a couple of things with you, if I may, Madam Chairwoman, from the proposed budget of the state of Missouri that the governor distributed a few weeks ago. Our budget process isn't quite done, so let me refer to the governor's budget. We often have constituents contact us and talk about money that we're wasting. Why can't this program be funded? Why is that program cut? Let me share with you some facts and figures about what we pay for the care of inmates. Page 9-6, financial summary of the Department of Corrections. Medical services, fiscal year 11, $134,086,000. Fiscal 13, $149,191,975, a $15 million increase in two fiscal years. There is a long list of line items for each individual medical-related service that they are provided. Medical equipment has risen $17,000 in 2 years. Substance abuse services, $1 million in 2 years. $22,000 increase in drug testing and toxicology services. And as always, there's no real solid way of pinpointing transportation costs to and from the hospital. We also have a component for our correctional officers and the benefits that we provide them. Consolidated health, the state health care plan, fiscal year. Recommendation by the governor, located on page 5-17. $376 million. We are at $550 million in inmate and employee health care. That's general revenue. There's no offsetting federal dollars. There's no grant programs. There's nothing. Straight general revenue. Now, smoking in prison certainly is very romantic. It is something that has been prominent in our pop culture. All of the movies that we have seen over the years, many of them I love. The Longest Yard, Shawshank Redemption. We could go through the list of tremendous motion pictures, and we always have the image of the idle inmate doing his or her time with a cigarette. The reality is, regardless of how you feel about tobacco usage and your right to have a tobacco product, which I'm all for, we pay for the health care for everyone on a prison campus. Everyone. Everyone. And we do now know that secondhand smoke in an enclosed place over an extended period of time is a real health risk. One of the problems with the contract that is let to Correctional Medical Services, or whatever they're called this week, I believe they're a Tennessee company as well this week, Might want to mention that. They do not have the same sort of quality measurements that our local hospitals have. Cass Medical Center, Representative, Research Belton. NCQA has a list of requirements that they must report as a public hospital for treatment and the success of treatments for things like COPD, respiratory ailments, pulmonary ailments, lung cancer. But we don't have the depth and breadth of that kind of data in the prison hospital. We don't know exactly how many people are being treated for COPD or how many people are being treated for lung cancer. We don't know the success rate or the failure rate. We don't know how long they live after a diagnosis. We have none of these quality outcomes that my committee, as chairman of the Health Insurance Committee, we deal with on a regular basis when monitoring and rating the quality of a hospital. And yet, we're spending $200 million on a hospital inside our prison walls with no idea exactly who is being treated, how they're being treated, and are those treatments successful. What we do, what we're excellent at, is continuing to see the prices do this. Folks, that's not a cost curve. That's a rocket ship. Just in the CMS line item, $15 million in two fiscal years. It's pretty amazing. We pay for their health care. 26 states have figured out a way to have an intake process that informs the inmate under our care, custody, and control that it will be a tobacco-free environment. Florida went to it. Their penal system is much larger than ours. Cass County does it. I mean, we can't even keep a commissioner from, we've had two commissioners removed from office in the last year, but somehow the sheriff manages to keep a jail smoke-free. So I recognize this is controversial. I recognize this upsets a lot of folks. I have the deepest respect for the correctional officers. But at some point, we need to acknowledge that this is a public policy that shouldn't just be changed for the sake of change, but it is a true financial management issue where we have failed to control costs in an area where we can identify a factor that will begin to blunt that cost explosion. And with that, Madam Chairwoman, I do have a few witnesses that would like to come forward when you're ready for them.
Do we have any questions of the bill sponsor? Okay. Representative Hubbard.
Good evening. Good to see you.
Sir, the first question I have for you, have a couple for you.
Yes.
Cass County Jail, what's the length of time that the stay is there?
Well, that's a good question. Obviously much shorter than would be at a DOC facility. In fact, as you know, many of those folks at Cass County Jail are simply waiting to be taken to a DOC facility.
Right, so unlike in the state facility where you have people actually really doing a hard time, 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Yes.
Okay. The second question I have for you, sir, you spoke on the health care that's provided for an inmate that's currently incarcerated. How much of that care is smoke-related issues?
I'd love to know. I'm hopeful that a representative from CMS is in the audience.
So do you have any idea how many inmates that are currently incarcerated in the state correctional facilities that we're paying for, and they're experiencing tremendous health issues regarding smoke?
If you'll recall, Gordon Bell, Douglas Gordon Bell, testified in this room a year ago this month, who had just been released from prison, and gave some very compelling testimony to the number of inmates that were smoking. If you recall, he...
Are you speaking of last year when one of the ex-offenders came? Uh-huh. Okay, but I guess my concern would be when we talk about the amount of money the state is spending on health care for inmates, I would be interested in knowing just how many of those instances that occur in the correctional facility with the health care that are smoke-related issues?
I would love to know. I hope somebody is here and they can...
So we really can't base it on that. We're just saying
part
that
the point, right,
if, in fact, they had developed a problem such as emphysema, smoking issues, lung problems, whatever, that would be something that we would have to care for if they did.
Barnes Jewish Hospital has to report this. CMS, our medical vendor, to my knowledge, doesn't.
Okay, I would just be interested in knowing what that would be.
I would too.
And another question, no programs for these people, just cold turkey, stop smoking, 2013?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm very hopeful that our public health foundations would be part of the process. I served on the Research Belt and Hospital Board. Health Midwest, a not-for-profit, owned the research hospital system in Kansas City. And when they were sold, the profits were spun off into a private healthcare foundation. The one in Kansas City is called the Greater Kansas City, the Healthcare Foundation of Greater Kansas City. We have a similar health foundation, not-for-profit, in St. Louis. We have the American Cancer Society, the American Lung Society. We have all these not-for-profits that have cessation programs. I would also mention...
But you didn't mention it in the bill, though. That's why, you know,
I don't, because...
They do exist, but you, as you said, very short...
That's right.
Bill.
We've placed the effective date out to July of 2013 simply to buy time for the intake procedures to change, for us to begin a dialogue with those not-for-profits who have specific cessation programs as part of their mission. I would certainly be open if you wanted to go December 31st of 13, if you don't think that it's enough time. We can always add in 6 more months or 8 more months to develop a comprehensive program with the not-for-profit foundations who exist for the purpose of getting people to quit smoking.
Well, right now I'm undecided what I think about this bill, period, because I have a lot of issues in regards to where I see that this could possibly be some major problems, and I've shared that with you before, and I'm all for us moving forward, but I have a problem with us not having things into place when we talk about taking drastic measurements. Mm-hmm.
You're right. This is drastic. This is a radical departure. I'm guilty of giving you a radical alternative.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Conway.
To inquire, Madam Chair.
See?
Thank you. Representative Mollendorf.
How are you?
We meet again.
Yes.
I have a few questions. Of course, you know, we've discussed this at length outside of here. Just a couple of questions. Do inmates pay taxes on the tobacco they purchase from the canteen?
You know, I believe they do, yes.
So there would be a little bit of a loss there.
Possibly,
revenue.
Yes.
Minute, but a little bit.
Could be.
I
would also say that I'm sure that loved ones do bring, and maybe this is a question for somebody from corrections, but loved ones certainly bring items to the prison, and a pack of cigarettes is certainly not.
But we would, in fact, lose that tax money.
You could, yeah, absolutely.
The other thing, you know, you talk about people that are in our state custody, and they really don't have any choice, and I guarantee you they're all there not by their choice.
That's right.
Should we maybe extend the non-smoking rule to everyone who takes any form of state aid?
Now, that is an interesting question. I haven't given that any thought.
Because people on Medicaid, we don't tell them they can't smoke, but yet we are
True.
Paying for their health care just
True.
The same. And
True.
Would you...
Now, I would argue that they are not in a confined, enclosed space 23 hours a day.
Which, in my mind, makes it even worse for the inmate who does smoke.
It does.
Because as someone who's addicted to nicotine, I'm telling you, that's more of a deterrent from breaking the law than anything else I can think of, is me being somewhere I couldn't get nicotine. That's very harmful to my psyche. And the other thing we discussed, would you be open to allowing, though, the water vapor nicotine delivery system available to these people in...
I've given some thought to that. That is actually, and you and I had a very very cordial, very frank conversation about that. I wonder, I've seen some of these advertised, and the prices vary wildly between electronic cigarettes. Is there a particular brand or particular kind that would be better than another kind, either in terms of cost or in terms of, you know, it's still nicotine. Obviously, it still is delivering nicotine, and there's a public health issue separate.
Nicotine has no adverse effect in the amount you get through this. Nicotine is a toxic, deadly substance, actually, but the quantity, you're not able to get that high of a quantity that would
actually... $25 items or $50 items?
I'll tell you, for a two-pack-a-day smoker to go on this system runs between $4 and $6 a week.
Okay. A pack of cigarettes, the cost of a pack of one pack
yes,
of cigarettes, roughly.
Yes, basically.
Depending on whether you're not in the city limits or in the county.
There you go.
Which is how it's done in my community.
But I just hate to see people, not all cessation works. You know, the attorney, Surgeon General C. Everett Koop has stated that nicotine can be more addictive than cocaine.
Sure.
And when people are dealing with a lot of other issues in their life, going to prison primarily, that's a lot to ask of them.
It is.
And a lot of cessation just doesn't work.
It is.
And a lot of it is psychological. A lot of it is the whole oral fixation, the things to do with your hands. It's not just the nicotine. So I'm just looking for ways to ease them into that fairly.
The other thing that has occurred to me, there will probably be a ballot initiative this fall to raise the cigarette tax, and we may have a witness that can speak to this. A good deal of those proceeds will go to cessation programs. I don't believe it's a financial issue. I think it probably speaks more to as you mentioned, it is addictive. There's an oral fixation. There's something to do with your hands. This is already a stressful part of your life for many people to go to prison. But at some point, we have to address the fact that we have lost control of part of the Department of Corrections budget when it comes to inmate health care. We have completely lost control. It's a multifaceted solution. This is one of those things that will speak to the solution. You know, I've been a big advocate of integrating telehealth at the University of Missouri into this system, taking the rural health care crisis and actually allowing nurses and doctors to be trained at prisons, which are located in rural areas. There are so many things we can do to corral this, but this thing is a runaway train financially. And as we wring our hands about the aged, blind, and disabled, we wring our hands about all of the programs, university extension, we wring our hands over all these budget issues, and yet one of the things that is growing faster than any other segment of the budget is this. This is a rocket ship, you know, straight to the top of the page every year. And it seems to me that this would be a reasonable place to start. 26 other states have done this. It's hard to argue that Florida is that much more progressive than Missouri, and yet they have done this with a much larger inmate population.
Do you have further questions of the sponsor, Representative?
No, thank you, Representative.
Thank
Representative
you.
Quinn?
Thank you.
To make a comment or kind of inquire about like what she was doing, my 2 cents worth for the day. It's interesting listening to the conversation. We're talking about, you know, and about if the inmates quit smoking, be a loss of income, you know, to the state of Missouri. But here we're wanting to make it where prisoners can smoke. We have the lowest tax rate in the U.S. We're willing to subsidize them, people smoking, at our expense. We won't address that. We have the lowest pay scale, I think, in the United States for correctional people. And I think, to me, sometimes we need to look at issues. You know what I mean? What cigarettes are costing us, and yet we're subsidizing the state of Missouri and talk about health care in prisons. I mean, you know, if you get people just quit smoking because of the taxes, well, so be it. But also, if it bring more money in so we can maybe halfway pay them and not have the turnover. I talked to a young lady last week about how hard it is to work inside a prison right now because of the turnover, the safety issue. And, you know, I think sometimes we have to look at the whole issue. You know, do we want to get rid of tobacco in there? Well, what about the safety of the guards that have to put up with that? And at the rate they're getting paid, and there'll be a lot of unrest. I mean, to me, there's a lot of issues right now that we talk about health care, and but yet we're very willing to subsidize tobacco. Everybody, you need to smoke more because we need more income. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Bratton.
Proceed. I'd just like to thank you for bringing this forward. I see the need to try and find ways to save money in the health insurance part of the correctional facility. I mean, I see it is a gaping hole. I have a bill that would require a copay, you know, to help, you know, keep them from going to the doctor, you know, an average of five times a month, you know, and not to mention like what your bill does with the smoking part of it and the health hazards in such a confined area. You know, my wife works at the Cass Correctional Facility. I'm in such a small area. To have somebody in there smoking along with you, you know, for to speak at the Department of Corrections level every day for 15 years, I mean, your health risks are going to be so much higher and greater need for it. So,
well, and I found it interesting that since the bill was introduced, in fact, I did a radio interview in Moberly. Obviously with a large facility there. I expected a lot of call-ins. I did not receive any call-ins on the radio program. I expected some correctional officers to call and let me have it, and that's fine. But I've received several emails, a couple of letters, and a couple of phone calls from folks saying, listen, we support your bill. I work at, I won't say where, blank facility. Don't want anybody to know because I don't want to catch flack from my fellow employees. But I got to tell you, I like your bill. There are a lot of us that don't want to work in that smoke every day. We're fearful to try to buck the system because we need a job. It's a good job. We wish it paid more. We don't want to lose that job. We don't want to cause any trouble. But we support your bill. We don't want to work in a confined space with this smoke anymore. And, you know, thanks for sticking your neck out. And I'm sure Lauren works with people that are probably pretty appreciative. They don't have to, you know, be in that all day long. The fellow wants to, you know, work in that environment, we should at least provide some quality of air for them to, you know.
Are there any other questions of the bill sponsor?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Okay. Seeing none, being respectful of time, we have two other bills to be heard, so we want to make sure that our testimony is very targeted and brief. Is there anyone here to speak in support of House Bill 1136?
Yes, Madam Chairwoman. I have three witnesses.
Hello, my name is Stan Cowan. I'm retired from the State Health Department after 33 years, and I'm currently working as a research aide at the University of Missouri, Columbia School of Medicine. And Representative Mollendorf has stated the purpose for his bill is to save the state a substantial portion of the $140-plus million now being spent on health care costs for prisoners. I will tell you, tobacco use is the leading cause of preventable disease and premature death, and as such is also a leading cause of health care cost. If only to reduce the burden of state expenditure for health care costs for prisoners, this bill deserves the committee's support. However, this bill will also improve the overall health of prisoners and corrections officials, protect correctional facilities from legal repercussions for allowing tobacco use, provide prisoners an economic advantage upon release, reduce fire risk, and decrease maintenance costs, especially for air filters and ventilation systems, repainting, and plumbing stoppages. There have been some concerns that prohibiting tobacco on prison grounds could lead to violence or make tobacco a black market commodity. When surveyed in 2007, 51 of the U.S. Departments of Corrections reported no violence or riots associated with transition to stricter tobacco policy. The black market could be a legitimate concern. However, there's no solid evidence this is a common result. Unfortunately, there aren't many studies on enforcement and compliance in correctional settings, but one qualitative study on the issue emphasized the importance of staff buy-in, education about cessation resources, and low-cost or no-cost cessation support for staff and inmates. Even though inmate smoking rates have been estimated to be up to three times that of Missouri's general population, it is also estimated that 70% of prisoners would like to quit tobacco use. Forced abstinence from tobacco during incarceration does not necessarily lead to continued cessation upon release, so it is critical to provide tobacco cessation services, as this will increase long-term quit rate success. Upon release, a majority of inmates do return to the communities they left behind, and their successful reintegration as productive contributing members to society can be hindered by health issues. Being a non-smoker is an important step in reducing health-related barriers to reintegration. In addition, recently released inmates would be on better economic footing without having to spend money on tobacco products and are more attractive to employers, because tobacco users are less productive as they use more sick leave and make more and costlier demands on health care coverage. As Representative Mollendorf intimated here, this bill is not groundbreaking. In July 2004, the Federal Bureau of Prisons made all its facilities smoke-free, and to date, as the representative stated, at least 26 states have a total ban on tobacco products, with their leading reason being health and safety concerns, followed by litigation concerns. None of them have backpedaled, which indicates this is workable and the benefits do outweigh the cost. The American Jail Association, the American Correctional Association, and the National Commission on Correctional Health have adopted resolutions that promote smoke-free policies. I would entertain any questions or comments.
Any questions of this witness? Representative McGee.
People that work there, the correctional officers, what are they? Are they coming out saying there's going to be a problem? I would imagine there's a lot of smokers that are working there that aren't incarcerated. Have we heard from them yet?
I haven't heard from them. I don't know if. Okay.
I suspect you'll hear from their association here in just a moment.
All right. Okay, that'll be good. We'll wait and hear.
Any other question? Thank you. Any other questions of this witness? Okay. Yeah, they're back there waiting. Okay, anyone that comes before the committee, please fill out a witness form. Call your next witness.
I'll be brief, Madam Chair. Misty Snodgrass, Director of Government Relations for the American Cancer Society. I also have a form for Leah Wiggs, Director of Government Relations for the American Lung Association. And there have been numerous points that have been made. I won't rehash those. I just wanted to highlight a couple of things. There have been numerous litigation for states that have allowed smoking in their prisons. So there are other potential costs with litigation of workers that have been exposed to secondhand smoke as well as inmates. And the other thing that I wanted to highlight, I was speaking last week to a former medical director at the Moberly Corrections Facility, and she told me of an inmate that was in the sign shop and cut off two or three fingers and had them reattached properly, major expensive surgeries that were associated with that. And then the physician said, inmate, you must stop smoking or you will lose all your fingers. The inmate did not stop smoking. So we not only had to pay for the cost for reattaching the fingers, they eventually had to pay the cost to remove the fingers because they had essentially had, you know, for lack of a better term, died off. And so there are costs, you know, for cancer, heart disease, COPD, asthma that we incur through correction officers that have health insurance, as well as the inmate health care that we are paying strictly out of general revenue. There are no additional federal dollars that go to that. It's purely paid out of general revenue. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of this witness? Okay. Representative Hubbard.
Quick question. Good evening. The question I have for you, I just wanted to make sure I understood you correctly, that the gentleman was told that if he did not stop smoking, he could lose those fingers or whatever. Do you feel like if that guy would have been more successful and stopped smoking had he been, if there had been a program or something available for him?
Absolutely. We support cessation as an, we don't believe that.
And was it?
I don't know if it was part of their benefit program or not from the medical, because the corrections health line item, I don't know if anybody's here, is it's kind of an ambiguous number, as Representative Moldorf has alluded to. So we know that the prison population has a higher percentage of smokers than the average population, anywhere from 50% to 75%. But we have no idea what those numbers are associated with the cost, and I don't know what their health benefit, if it includes.
No, I was just trying to make sure if he had been offered some sort of assistance.
Not to my knowledge, but I didn't get into the weeds.
All right,
she was a nurse and couldn't HIPAA reasons.
Thank you.
Any other questions of this witness? Representative McGee?
Inquire, Madam Chair.
Proceed.
I had a constituent from my community that has a son that's in Cameron, Missouri, and he was on a work detail, and that a trailer had come off of the ball and come down and messed his toes up. And he was going to have some toes amputated, and he would not quit smoking. They told him if he just quit smoking that those arteries or those veins would grow back and that he would be able to save those toes. And it ended up being, my understanding is I think they ended up taking his toes off, that he would not quit smoking.
But yeah, that's a common problem. Yeah.
And
exactly.
That was a cost to the state. And
absolutely.
I think now there's a lawsuit because the trailer fell off, and so I think we're going to pay some more money for that down the road. I'd
yeah.
forgotten of that, but I'm glad you mentioned it.
And just one other point I forgot to mention, I'll be brief, but I have heard there have been problems with doctors coming into facilities due to them not being smoke-free and inmates not being able to quit, and they feel like they're doing duplicative surgery.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right. Any other questions of this witness? All right. Seeing none?
Thank you.
Y'all out there need to liven up. You're putting us to sleep. All right, call your next witness.
Hi, Madam Chairwoman and members of the committee. My name is Jay Smith. I'm the registered lobbyist with the American Heart Association. We just want to go on record in support of this bill, and as everybody talked about, exposure to secondhand smoke, especially 5 days a week, does restrict your arteries, decreases the blood flow, and it actually doubles your chances of a heart attack. So we certainly appreciate the representative for bringing this bill forward again, and we hope for your support.
Thank you. Any questions of this witness? I believe you filled out a witness form.
Yes,
okay,
I did.
Okay, please
yeah.
leave it up there.
Thank you.
Anyone else here to speak in support of House Bill 1136? Seeing none? We do have one witness.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Emmy McClelland, and I am not speaking on behalf of my employer. I'm here on behalf of the Webster Groves Presbyterian Church Stevens Ministry Program. So I kind of try and use Matthew 25, 31 through 41 as a guide for my way of life, you know, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, very easy for all of us to do. Then it comes to visit the sick. That takes a little more time, and it's a real bummer going to visit people in nursing homes or confined to hospitals ready to die. And going to visit somebody in the prison, that's not, going to visit somebody in a prison, that's really not my bag. That's for somebody else to do. But my husband and I always send cards at Christmas time and Thanksgiving time and Easter to the shut-ins in our church and feel like we're doing a little. And for this year, for the first time, a lady's name showed up on the list who was a member of our church. And she is now an inmate in Vandalia. And I'm not going to tell you the details of the crime. Suffice to say it was very heinous against her family, and her family will never fully recover. So we thought, pause for a minute, well, yeah, we'll send her an email. Well, I received in about 2 weeks later, a 6-page handwritten letter from her. I'm not going to read it. She had questions. Did I know Representative Moldorf? Was I familiar with his bill? Did I know the people on the Corrections Committee? I didn't send her your name or a legislative directory. but she obviously knew about his legislation. She knew that I had been her state representative, which I had. She and her family had had my yard signs when I ran for office. We always remember those folks. So she wanted to know if I was still her state representative. Obviously, it happened before term limits. And so she wanted to know if I would help Representative Mohlendorf get his bill passed. Well, I wasn't really quite counting on that question. And so I'm not going to read some of the points, but suffice it to say that she suffers from secondhand smoke. There's smoking in the bathrooms, and she gets it into her prison room. She gets it in the showers. Not to mention, she talked about guards who have to take people on prisoners on breaks every hour, and that takes away from other duties that they have, not to mention the fire alarm drills that they have to have when the smoke alarm goes off from inside smokers, and what a bother that is and the time it takes. But she has developed emphysema while in the prison. She's not going to get out anytime in the near future. So I want to urge you all on behalf of her and other people to consider passing this bill. And I know it's not easy for you all to vote for it. It's going to be very hard. Many of you have constituents who might be smokers and who might be employees who are smokers. I know it's not easy to quit. I smoked for 15 years and quit in 1975. And for 5 years after I quit, I loved being around just good whiff of that cigarette smoke, and that's all I needed, but I did miss it. And so I know it's not easy. It's not easy for you to all have to make this vote. It's not easy for me to be here and testify, because I know for many of you who I don't know real well, you'll probably think of me the smoking in prisons lady and not the child advocate lady. But it's the right thing to do, and I urge you all to vote for Representative Mohlendorf's bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there any questions of this witness? Seeing none, is there anyone else here to speak in support of House Bill 1136? All right, seeing none, is there here to any opposition to House Bill 1136?
Members of the committee, Madam Chair, my name is Harry Hill, and I'm a registered lobbyist for the Missouri Corrections Officers Association, and I have been for 10 or 12 years now, and I'd like to share a few things with you and be brief of some of the things that I've learned from just being around people who worked in prisons, you know, the corrections officers, people who do the day-to-day work. But one thing I wanted to mention specifically, and that is there is no smoking in buildings on the prisons. All the smoking is outside and has been for several years in designated smoking areas. And because prisoners can only get outside in limited time, it's estimated that, you know, maybe the cigarettes they can smoke to a day would be 6 or 7 or 8 or something like that. There's not just sitting around and smoking just to idle the time away or pass the time away. So it's really limited. There's this idea of secondhand smoke is not quite as great as you might think, because the people are smoking outside. Now, some of my comments here will be in response to from what corrections officers have told me, and one of them is in response to Ms. Hubbard's question about, you know, how much of the problems, health problems in prisons are caused by smoking-related illnesses. And what I've been told is that so many of the inmates who come in, and a great number of the population are young people, 20, 30 years old, they come in and they have severe drug problems. And so much of the health care costs are trying to treat these drug problems. And these things, some of these things are hard to quantify. Also, in regard to what the corrections officers say about if you make smoking in the prisons unlawful or illegal to have cigarettes or illegal to smoke, the cigarettes will become black market, as Mr. Quinn said, or contraband, and there will be cigarettes in there. And then it becomes a much more precious commodity. There'll be more fights, more disruption, more instances where corrections officers are put in peril because they have to break up fights or spend a lot of time searching for the cigarettes. And I've heard stories from Kansas, for instance, where smoking is illegal in the prison, on the prison grounds. And a guy was telling me that there was an inmate killed over a pack of cigarettes there. And then I was just reminded by Mr. Gross here, who's the executive director. He said, well, you know, people have been killed here over cigarettes. It becomes a precious commodity. It makes it more difficult for everybody. And I really understand what Mr. Mollendorp is saying about the cost of health care, inmate health care. It's just incredible. But I'm not so sure that smoking has so much to do with it. And I find it a little bit uncomfortable to testify against Mr. Mollendorp's bill, because I admire his work here, and he's been particularly attentive to our needs, and he's been good to us. But we just disagree or taking a little bit of a different approach on this thing.
Any questions of this witness? Seeing none, is there anyone else here to speak in opposition of House Bill 1136? Seeing none, is there anyone here to speak in for informational purposes only?
Committee. Tricia Workman appearing here today on behalf of Corizon. We are the provider of health care for inmates. I don't believe, I called my client when I was outside, I do not believe that we track smoking-related illnesses. My understanding is that we may know the number of inmates that use health care services because of lung cancer. We may not always track exactly what caused that lung cancer, but I can ask them to put together what information we do track and make that available to the sponsor and the committee. And we do not have a position on whether prisons should be smoking or non-smoking. The one issue we'd point out is there are a lot of prisoners who come to prison with existing health care conditions that have already been caused by smoking. So we're not sure that you're going to see dramatic savings initially, but to the extent things are preventable, this clearly could start to address those.
All right. Any questions? Go ahead.
Inquire. So why is it that you do not, I guess, kind of like other hospitals, have to show your reports and statistics and things of that nature?
I need to find out exactly what we do track. I think the issue is we're not always sure what the causation is. But to the extent that we do track things for corrections, I will make sure that we get that. And I can get more specifics on what we do track. So the answer might be I'm not sure right now.
All right, thank you.
All right. Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, is there anyone else here to speak for informational purposes?
Madam Chair, I am Andy Briscoe, the legislative liaison for the Department of Corrections, and just a couple of quick items I wanted to share with you based on reports that the department keeps. They are a couple of years old, so the numbers may have changed. Currently, our records show that 56% of offenders in the Department of Corrections smoke, 41% of Department of Corrections employees smoke. One of the issues that I think the committee needs to be aware of in considering this bill, the question was raised, are tax revenues generated from the sale of cigarettes? Yes. $5.7 million are generated from the sale of cigarettes. Those funds are kept within the Department of Corrections and used to fund various educational programs, spiritual programs, and recreational programs at our facilities. Additionally, as part of the 2010 study, we examined the cost of cessation programs, and the costs ranged if folks wanted to pursue something independent and apart from what they're focusing particularly on the DOC employees. Those costs range from $230 to $440.
All right. Specifically,
in the canteen items in the prison that are available to the inmates, there is a sales tax?
Yes, ma'am.
Cigarettes only are all products in the
canteen? My understanding that all products have a sales tax on them that will then be utilized as part of the canteen fund.
Could you get with me after the tomorrow on that? Because I had received some information in the past that those items were not taxable, but I'd like to have some confirmation of that.
I reserve the right to be wrong on that,
okay,
too.
All right. You have that right. Okay. Any other questions for this witness? Okay.
So with the sales tax, you said $5.6 million from just cigarette sales tax alone?
Yes,
or
sir.
Just the sales tax in general?
From the cigarettes alone.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Now, with the correctional officers maybe having, what about maybe allowing the electronic cigarette for correctional officers while on duty or something like that, so it's a less burden for them, but, you know, for the inmates, you know. I mean, is that something that correctional officers would be a little more happy with? I guess I should ask the representative for their organization, but that kind of just hit me. So, okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Leach, proceed.
Hi, I want to thank you for your testimony. I'm a former smoker, and I know I've saved a ton of money by not doing this. What is the cost of a pack of cigarettes at the canteen?
That I'm unsure of that. I did not ask that specific question of our folks, but I can get that to you tomorrow if that would be it.
Okay, that would be great, because I think, you know, we talked about economic advantage once they get out. You know, if that money was put into their own savings account, they'd have money to pay their intervention fees for probably several months after they were released. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hubbard?
Real quick, sir. It's still the policy that employees that work at the correctional facilities, they too go outside. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Can families bring cigarettes into the prison for inmates, or do they have to be purchased inside the prison?
It's my understanding they have to be purchased inside the prison.
Proceed.
Thank you. Just one comment then. So the fiscal note on this, and I know neither one of you prepared it, might be an error when it shows zero. That's a possibility. Thank you.
Come off of their revenue. So she is accurate. NDOC. Okay.
I would say that a cursory review of the budget, I could find the canteen account.
Andy, would you check into that question that the representative had about the sales tax and the fiscal note? If there is sales tax captured on the cigarette sales and there's the lack of sales, there would be a revenue negative there. Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other any others here to speak for informational purposes only? All right. Seeing none, this concludes the hearing on House Bill 1136.